good taste, and that not being satisfied unless our preferences are met is a sign of worldliness and sophistication. I remember being at a party where a woman wouldn't accept her drink unless it was made with a certain brand of vermouth. She was, in fact, indignant about it. Or going to dinner with a colleague who had to have his steak prepared in a complex and special way, as if this particular need to be different was his special public signature. Or watching very intelligent men and women inscribe their circle of loneliness with criteria for companionship that no one could meet. I used to maintain such a standard of excellence around the sort of art I found acceptable. Often, this kind of discernment is seen as having high standards, when in actuality it is only a means of isolating ourselves from being touched by life, while rationalizing that we are more special than those who can't meet our very demanding standards. The devastating truth is that excellence can't hold you in the night, and, as I learned when ill, being demanding or sophisticated won't help you survive. A person dying of thirst doesn't ask if the water has chlorine or if it was gathered in the foothills of France. Yet to be accepting of the life that comes our way does not mean denying its difficulties and disappointments. Rather, it means that joy can be found even in hardship, not by demanding that we be treated as special at every turn, but through accepting the demand of the sacred, that we treat everything that comes our way as special. Still, we are taught to develop preferences as signs of importance and position. In fact, those who have no preferences, those who are accepting of whatever is placed before them, are often seen as simpletons or bumpkins. However, there is a profound innocence in the fact that sages and children alike are easily pleased with what each day gifts them. The further I awaken to this life, the more I realize that God is everywhere, and the extraordinary is waiting quietly beneath the skin of all that is ordinary. Light is in both the broken bottle and the diamond, and music is in both the flowing violin and the water dripping from the drainage pipe. Yes, God is under the porch as well as on top of the mountain, and joy is in both the front row and the bleachers, if we are willing to be where we are. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind a time that you were demanding or particular beyond the need to take good care of yourself. Meditate on what it was you were truly asking for by being so demanding. If you needed attention, acknowledge that need now with your next breath and give attention to whatever is near. If it was the need to be seen as special, exhale that need now and see the things before you as special. If it was the need to be loved, release that need now and love whatever is in your path. Enter your day and give what you need, and over time feel the specialness of the world return it to you. January 21st, to see with love. Enlightenment is intimacy with all things. Jack Kornfield. Each of us spins repeatedly from blindness to radiance, from dividedness to wholeness, and it's our impulse to stay in touch with all that is alive that keeps us from staying lost. It's the impulse to be intimate. It brings to mind the young blind French boy Jacques Lusseron, who in learning how to navigate his way among the other forms of life in his darkness, stumbled onto the secret of undivided living. Young Lusseron said, "It is more than seeing them. It is tuning in on them and allowing the current they hold to connect with one's own, like electricity. To put it differently, this means an end of living in front of things and a beginning of living with them. Never mind if the word sounds shocking, for this is love. To live with things and not in front of them. To no longer watch, but to realize that we are part of everything we see. This is the love that keeps moving us back into wholeness when divided. To love by admitting our connection to everything is how we stay well. Allowing the current of another's inwardness to connect with our own is the beginning of both intimacy and enlightenment. For your meditation, close your eyes and be still until you can sense the presence of the things about you. Breathe softly and feel the current of their silence. Breathe evenly and open your heart to all that you sense. Feel the electricity of being that informs the world. January 22nd. Not two. To reach a chord, just say, not two. Seng Tsan. Almost 1400 years ago, one of the first Chinese sages we know of offered this brief retort to those who pestered him for advice, not two. This reply is as pertinent as it is mysterious. To make sense of it, we need to understand what isn't said, that everything that divides and separates removes us from what is sacred, and so weakens our chances for joy. How can this be? Well, to understand this, we must open ourselves to an even deeper truth, that everything, you and I and the people we mistrust, and even the things we fear, everything at heart follows the same beat of life pulsing beneath all the distractions and preferences we can create. Once divided from the common beat of life, we are cut off from the abundance and strength of life, the way an organ cut out of the body dies. So to find peace, to live peace, we need to keep restoring our original oneness. We need to experience that ancient and central beat which we share with everything that exists. In feeling this common beat, we begin to swell again with the common strength of everything alive. Yet, we tend to lose our way when faced with choices. Tension builds around decisions because we quickly sort and name one way as good and another as bad. This quickly twists into an either-or sense that one way is right and another is wrong. In prizing what we prefer, we start to feel a thirst for something particular, which getting we call success, and a fear of not getting it, which we then call failure. From all this, we begin to feel the tightening pressure not to make a terrible mistake. Thus, we are often stymied and confused because we forget that beneath our sorting of everything into good and bad, right and wrong, success and failure, all the choices still hold the truth and strength of life, no matter what we prefer. To be certain, sharing a common beat does not mean that everything is the same. For things are infinite in how they differ, and faced with the richness of life, we can't value everything the same. But when we believe that only what we want holds the gold, then we find ourselves easily depressed by what we lack. Then we are pained by what we perceive as the difference between here and there, between what we have and what we need. We still need to discern the 10,000 things we meet, but holding them to the light of our heart, we can say, not two, only one. And realize there are no wrong turns, only unexpected paths. For your meditation, meditate on a choice that is before you. Identify the distinct options you have. Try not to view these options with the urgency of what you prefer. Rather, focus on the experience each option might offer you. Try not to attach your sense of identity to any one option. If you don't get what you want, try not to see it as a failure, but as an unexpected opening. January 23rd. Getting at what matters. If you want to be truly understood, you need to say everything 3 times in 3 different ways, once for each ear, and once for the heart. Paula Underwood Spencer. For years I felt so unheard that when asked a question after speaking my heart, I'd take it as rejection or criticism. Often, though, it was just someone trying to understand. What was called for was for me to circle the unsayable and try again. I've learned that true dialogue requires both speaker and listener to try several times to get at what matters. For sometimes the truth is uttered just as I have to cough, or your heart opens and closes while I am struggling to land. So much depends on timing. And so I've learned not to repeat myself, but to play what matters like a timeless melody again and again if the one before me is honest and sincere. This is a talking meditation. Sit with a loved one and take turns circling the unsayable. First, tell your loved one how you feel about them. Then take some time in silence and say how you feel again. After some more time in silence, take each other's hands and say how you feel one last time. January 24th. Miracle Thinking. There are 2 ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. Albert Einstein. There is no end to worry, because there is no end to what exists out of view, beyond our very small eyes. So worry is a way to gamble with what might or might not happen. It reminds me of a friend who had a flat tire on a country road. After finding he had no jack, he began walking, hoping to find a nearby farmer who would help him. It was getting dark and the crickets were getting louder. As he walked the overgrown road, he began to throw the dice of worry in his mind. What if the farmer's not home? What if he is and won't let me use his jack? What if he won't let me use his phone? What if he's frightened of me? I never did anything to him. Why won't he just let me use his phone? By the time he knocked on the farmer's door, my friend was so preoccupied with what could go wrong that when the friendly old man answered, my friend bellowed, "Well, you can keep your goddamn jack." Being human, we struggle constantly to stay with the miracle of what is and not to fall constantly into the black hole of what is not. This is an ancient challenge. As the Sufi poet Ghalib said centuries ago, every particle of creation sings its own song of what is and what is not. Hearing what is can make you wise. Hearing what is not can drive you mad. For your meditation, sit quietly and consider a situation that is causing you to worry. Breathe slowly, and as you inhale, focus on accepting what is. Try to let in both the gifts and hardships of the reality you are in. Breathe evenly, and as you exhale, focus on releasing what is not. Try to let go of all the imagined outcomes that are not yet real. Settle into the miracle of what is. January 25th. Loving yourself. I begin to realize that in inquiring about my own origin and goal, I am inquiring about something other than myself. In this very realization, I begin to recognize the origin and the goal of the world. Martin Buber. In loving ourselves, we love the world. For just as fire, rock, and water are all made up of molecules, everything, including you and me, is connected by a small piece of the beginning. Yet, how do we love ourselves? It is as difficult at times as seeing the back of your head. It can be as elusive as it is necessary. I have tried and tripped many times, and I can only say that loving yourself is like feeding a clear bird that no one else can see. You must be still and offer your palm full of secrets like delicate seed. As she eats your secrets, no longer secret, she glows and you lighten, and her voice, which only you can hear, is your voice bereft of plans. And the light through her body will bathe you till you wonder why the gems in your palm were ever fisted. Others will think you crazed to wait on something no one sees, but the clear bird only wants to feed and fly and sing. She only wants light in her belly. And once in a great while, if someone loves you enough, they might see her rise from the nest beneath your fear. In this way, I've learned that loving yourself requires a courage unlike any other. It requires us to believe in and stay loyal to something no one else can see that keeps us in the world, our own self-worth. All the great moments of conception, the birth of mountains, of trees, of fish, of prophets, and the truth of relationships that last, all begin where no one can see, and it is our job not to extinguish what is so beautifully begun. For once full of light, everything is safely on its way, not pain-free, but unencumbered. And the air beneath your wings is the same air that trills in my throat, and the empty benches in snow are as much a part of us as the empty figures who slouch on them in spring. When we believe in what no one else can see, we find we are each other. And all moments of living, no matter how difficult, come back into some central point where self and world are one, where light pours in and out at once. And once there, I realize, make real before me, that this moment, whatever it might be, is a fine moment to live, and a fine moment to die. For your meditation, as you sit quietly, let each breath take you deeper into your center, and without sorting or selecting through what you find, become aware of an old and original part of who you are. It could be your laugh, or your stubbornness, or your love of flowers, or your love of rain. Hold that old and original part of you in your breathing as you enter your day. Be open to finding this deep part of you in others, for the same wind touches many leaves. January 26th. Being Kind. 1. You often say, "I would give, but only to the deserving." The trees in your orchard say not so, nor the flocks in your pastures. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish. Khalil Gibran. The great and fierce mystic William Blake said, "There is no greater act than putting another before you." This speaks to a selfless giving that seems to be at the base of meaningful love. Yet having struggled for a lifetime with letting the needs of others define me, I've come to understand that without the healthiest form of self-love, without honoring the essence of life that this thing called self carries, the way a pod carries a seed, Putting another before you can result in damaging self-sacrifice and endless codependence. I have in many ways over many years suppressed my own needs and insights in an effort not to disappoint others, even when no one asked me to. This is not unique to me. Somehow in the course of learning to be good, we have all been asked to wrestle with a false dilemma, being kind to ourselves or being kind to others. In truth, though, being kind to ourselves is a prerequisite to being kind to others. Honoring ourselves is, in fact, the only lasting way to release a truly selfless kindness to others. It is, I believe, as Mencius, the grandson of Confucius, says, that just as water unobstructed will flow downhill, we, given the chance to be what we are, will extend ourselves in kindness. So the real and lasting practice for each of us is to remove what obstructs us so that we can be who we are, holding nothing back. If we can work toward this kind of authenticity, then the living kindness, the water of compassion, will naturally flow. We do not need discipline to be kind, just an open heart. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate on the water of compassion that pools in your heart. As you breathe, simply let it flow, without intent, into the air about you. January 27th. Being kind, too. We love what we attend. Mwalimu Imara. There were two brothers who never got along. One was forever ambushing everything in his path, looking for the next treasure while the first was still in his hand. He swaggered his shield and cursed everything he held. The other brother wandered in the open with very little protection, attending whatever he came upon. He would linger with every leaf and twig and broken stone. He blessed everything he held. This little story suggests that when we dare to move past hiding, a deeper law arises. When we bear our inwardness fully, exposing our strengths and frailties alike, we discover a kinship in all living things. And from this kinship, a kindness moves through us and between us. The mystery is that being authentic is the only thing that reveals to us our kinship with life. In this way, we can unfold the opposite of Blake's truth and say, there is no greater act than putting yourself before another. Not before another, as in coming first, but rather as in opening yourself before another, exposing your essence before another. Only in being this authentic can real kinship be known and real kindness released. It is why we are moved, even if we won't admit it, when strangers let down and show themselves. It is why we stop to help the wounded and the real. When we put ourselves fully before another, it makes love possible the way the stubborn land goes soft before the sea. For your meditation, place a favorite object in front of you. And as you breathe, put yourself fully before it and feel what makes it special to you. As you breathe, meditate on the place in you where that specialness comes from. Keep breathing evenly and know this specialness as a kinship between you and your favorite object. During your day, take the time to put yourself fully before something that is new to you, and as you breathe, try to feel your kinship to it. January 28th. Meeting the world. You must meet the outer world with your inner world, or existence will crush you. There is a wind that keeps blowing since the beginning of time. And in every language ever spoken, it continues to whisper, you must meet the outer world with your inner world, or existence will crush you. If inner does not meet outer, our lives will collapse and vanish. Though we often think that hiding our inwardness will somehow protect or save us, it is quite the opposite. The heart is very much like a miraculous balloon. Its lightness comes from staying full. Meeting the days with our heart prevents collapse. This is why 90-year-old widows remain committed to tending small flowers in spring. Why 10-year-olds with very little to eat care for stray kittens, holding them to their skinny chests. Why painters going blind paint more. Why composers going deaf write great symphonies. This is why when we think we can't possibly try again, we let out a sigh that goes back through the centuries, and then, despite all our experience, we inhale and try again. For your meditation, center yourself and breathe slowly and deeply. As you breathe, feel your lungs fill and empty like a balloon. As you breathe, realize that your heart is filling and emptying itself of an inner air. During your day, let this inner air meet the world whenever you feel overwhelmed. January 29th, The Unspoiled Clearing. I am too alone in the world and not alone enough to make every moment holy. Rainer Maria Rilke. It seems there are two basic ways to feel the fullness of life, and both arise from the authenticity of our relationships. One is from our love of life, and the other is from our love of each other. Often in our solitude, we can discover the miracles of life if we take the time and risk to be alone until the glow of life presents itself. This is the reward of all meditation. It's like taking the path of our aloneness deep enough through the woods so we can reach that unspoiled clearing. We can also reach that unspoiled clearing by taking the time and risk to be thoroughly with each other. And this is the reward of love. But our most frequent obstacle to experiencing the fullness of life, which I have suffered many times, is the hesitancy that keeps us from being either fully alone with life or fully alone with each other. Being halfway anywhere is the true beginning of loneliness. For your meditation, sit quietly. And let a point of loneliness that you carry rise to your awareness. Breathe slowly, and if you can, feel which way you need to lean with it, more into yourself or more into the world. Breathe deeply and try to move your heart in that direction. January 30th. Being a pilgrim. To journey without being changed is to be a nomad. To change without journeying is to be a chameleon. To journey and to be transformed by the journey is to be a pilgrim. We all start out as pilgrims, wanting to journey and hoping to be transformed by the journey. But just as it is impossible when listening to an orchestra to hear the whole of the symphony for very long before we're drawn to hear only the piano or the violin, in just this way, our attention to life slips and we experience people and places without being affected by their wholeness. And sometimes, feeling isolated and unsure, we change or hide what lives within in order to please or avoid others. The value of this insight is not to use it to judge or berate ourselves, but to help one another see that integrity is an unending process of letting our inner experience and our outer experience complete each other, in spite of our very human lapses. I understand these things so well because I violate them so often. Yet I, as you, consider myself a pilgrim of the deepest kind, journeying beyond any one creed or tradition, into the compelling, recurring space in which we know the moment and are changed by it. Mysteriously, as elusive as it is, this moment, where the eye is what it sees, where the heart is what it feels, this moment shows us that what is real is sacred. For your meditation, center yourself, and without judgment, bring to mind a time that you refuse to let your experience change you. Simply feel that time's presence. As you breathe, bring to mind a time that you changed yourself to please or avoid another. Again, simply feel that time's presence. As you soften, bring to mind a time that you journeyed forth and were changed by the journey. Feel this time's presence. Without judgment, give thanks by accepting all of this. Give thanks for being human. January 31st. Practicing. As a man in his last breath drops all he is carrying, each breath is a little death that can set us free. Breathing is the fundamental unit of risk, the atom of inner courage that leads us into authentic living. With each breath we practice opening, taking in, and releasing. Literally, the teacher is under our nose. When anxious, we simply have to remember to breathe. So often we make a commitment to change our ways, but stall in the face of old reflexes as new situations arise. When gripped by fear or anxiety, the reflex is to hold on, speed up, or remove oneself. Yet when we feel the reflex to hold on, that is usually the moment we need to let go. When we feel the urgency to speed up, that is typically the instant we need to slow down. Often when we feel the impulse to flee, it is the opportunity to face ourselves. Taking a deep meditative breath precisely at this moment can often break the momentum of anxiety and put our psyche in neutral. From here, we just might be able to step in another direction. I'm not talking about external moments of anxiety here, but inner moments of truth. Certainly when an accident is unfolding, we need to get out of the way. When a loved one falls, we need to try to hold them. Rather, I'm talking about fear of love and truth and God, fear of change and the unknown. I'm talking about how we all grip tightly to what we know, even if we hurt ourselves in the process. Dropping all we carry, all our preconceptions, our interior lists of the ways we've failed and the ways we've been wronged, all the secret burdens we work at maintaining. Dropping all regret and expectation lets our mentality die. Dropping all we have constructed as imperative allows us to be born again into the simplicity of spirit that arises from unencumbered being. It is often overwhelming to imagine changing our entire way of life. Where do we begin? How do we take down a wall that took 25 or 50 years to erect? Breath by breath, little death by little death, dropping all we carry, instant by instant. Trusting that what has done the carrying, if freed, will carry us. For your meditation, sit by yourself, alone, in a safe place, and think of the last situation that made you anxious. Ask yourself, what specifically made you uncomfortable? Intensing, what did you cling to in your mind? Place both your discomfort and your clinging before you now. In this safe place, touch what scared you It can't hurt you now. In this safe place, drop what your mind clung to. It can't help you now. Repeat this several times while breathing slowly and deeply. Breathe. Feel in detail what rises in you without the discomfort or the clinging. Breathe. This is the God in you. Bow to it. February 1st. Live slow enough. Live slow enough and there is only the beginning of time. Follow anything in its act of being. A snowflake falling, ice melting, a loved one waking. And we are ushered into the ongoing moment of the beginning, the quiet instant from which each breath starts. What makes this moment so crucial is that it continually releases the freshness of living. The key to finding this moment in all its freshness again and again is in slowing down. Often when we are inconvenienced, we are being asked to slow down. When we're delayed in our travel or waiting for a check in a restaurant, we're being asked to open up and look around. When we find ourselves stalled in our very serious and ambitious plans, we are often being asked to re-find the beginning of time. Unfortunately, we are all so high-paced, running so fast to where we want to be, that many of us are forced to slow down through illness or breakage. In this we are such funny creatures. If we could see ourselves from far enough away, we would seem like a colony of insects running into things repeatedly, thousands of little determined beings butting into obstacles, shaking our little heads and bodies, and running into things again. Like the earth that carries us, the ground of our being moves so slowly we take it for granted. But if you should feel stalled, numb, or exhausted from the trials of your life, simply slow your thoughts to the pace of cracks widening. Slow your heart to the pace of the earth soaking up the rain, and wait for the freshness of the beginning to greet you. For your meditation, place a dry sponge and a glass of water before you. Set them aside for the moment. Center yourself by letting the energy of all that feels urgent rush through you. Exhale and try to let it go. Now drip a small amount of water on the sponge, and as you breathe slowly, watch how the sponge opens. Keep dripping water on the sponge as you breathe, and feel your heart open. February 2nd. Two heart cells beating. If you place two living heart cells from different people in a petri dish, they will in time find and maintain a third and common beat. Molly Voss. This biological fact holds the secret of all relationship. It is cellular proof that beneath any resistance we might pose, and beyond all our attempts that fall short, there is in the very nature of life itself some essential joining force. This inborn ability to find and enliven a common beat is the miracle of love. This force is what makes compassion possible, even probable. For if two cells can find the common pulse beneath everything, how much more can full hearts feel when all excuses fall away? This drive toward a common beat is the force beneath curiosity and passion. It is what makes strangers talk to strangers despite the discomfort. It is how we risk new knowledge. For being still enough, long enough, next to anything living, we find a way to sing the one voiceless song. Yet we often tire ourselves by fighting how our hearts want to join, seldom realizing that both strength and peace come from our hearts beating in unison with all that is alive. It feels incredibly uplifting that without even knowing each other, there exists a common beat between all hearts just waiting to be felt. It brings to mind the time that the great poet Pablo Neruda, near the end of his life, stopped while traveling at the Lota coal mine in rural Chile. He stood there stunned as a miner, rough and blackened by his work inside the earth, strode straight for Neruda, embraced him, and said, "I have known you a long time, my brother." Perhaps this is the secret, that every time we dare to voice what beats within, we invite some other cell of heart to find what lives between us and sing. For your meditation, breathe deeply in silence and feel the beat of your heart. Meditate on the common beat the cells of your heart carry. Let this beat sound like a beacon from you. As you enter your day, keep sending the beat of your heart to everything around you. Do this with your regular breathing. Be aware of the moments you feel energized or filled with emotion. It is in the life of these moments that you are in full relationship with the world. February 3rd, yearning. Before we blink, we know each other. We speak before we speak, with eyes and lips, in how we tip our heads, and how we lean like trees tired of waiting for the sun. We tell our whole story before we even open our mouths. Yet we frequently pretend that nothing is conveyed. We pretend we're strangers and deny what we learn before words. We are all made up of yearning and light, searching for a way out, afraid we will be shut in or cut off or repelled back into the ground from which we are reaching. This is enough to begin, to know, before all the names and histories drape who we are, that we want to be held and left alone, again and again. Held and left alone until the dance of it is how we survive and grow, like spring into winter, into spring again. For your meditation, as you move through your day, let in what you learn of others by how their being passes you. Without a word, bestow a blessing on each as they walk away. February 4th, a set of inner doors. The stuff of our lives doesn't change. It is we who change in relation to it. Mali Vas. Whatever our gifts or wounds or life situation, whether we've been married several times or have never been in love, whether we have plenty of money or are sorely in need of more, the core issues of our lives will not go away. There exists for each life on earth a set of inner doors that no one can go through for us. We can change jobs or lovers, travel around the world, become a doctor or lawyer or expert mountain climber, or nobly put our life on hold to care for an ailing mother or father. And when we're done, though the worthy distraction could take years, the last threshold we didn't cross within will be there waiting. There is no substitute for genuine risk. Stranger still is how the very core issues we avoid return, sometimes with different faces, but still, we are brought full circle to them again and again. Regardless of how we may try to skip over or sidestep what we need to face, we humbly discover that no other threshold is possible until we use our courage to open the door before us. Perhaps the oldest working truth of self-discovery is that the only way out is through. That we are returned repeatedly to the same circumstance is not always a sign of avoidance, but can mean our work around a certain issue is not done. In my own life, it's not by chance that struggling to adulthood with a domineering and critical mother, I've been thrust again and again into situations with dominant men and women, struggling painfully for their approval and fearing their rejection. For years, I tried to manage the circumstance better, which was like sanding and varnishing the door without ever opening it. I was destined to repeat the pain of rejection, no matter how skillfully I handled it, until I opened the door of self-worth. Even my calling to be a poet became a distraction that lasted many years. Feeling rejected and insecure at heart, I quietly made a mission of becoming a famous writer, only to find myself one day replaying the issues of approval and rejection 100-fold at the mailbox as I awaited word from countless critical strangers known as editors. I was stunned and relieved to finally discover myself at the same threshold of loving myself that I had run from years before. The thresholds go nowhere. It is we who, in our readiness and experience, keep coming back, because the soul knows only one way to fulfill itself, and that is to take in what is true. For your meditation, meditate on an issue that keeps returning to you. Relate to it as a messenger, and ask the messenger what door it is trying to open for you. How will your life change if you move through this threshold? How will your life be affected if you do not? February 5th, Beneath Problem Solving. Beneath most headaches is a heartache. Often we find it easier to think our way around things rather than to feel our way through them. What can we do to pull ourselves out of a bad mood? What can we buy, remove, or repair that will reduce or solve a loved one's anger or sadness? In retrospect, I realize I have spent many hours problem-solving emotional facts I just needed to feel. I know now that my frequent labors to understand what went wrong, while somewhat useful, often were distractions from feeling the sadness and disappointment necessary to heal and move on. It's all very human. No one wants to feel pain, especially when you can't quite point to a specific cut or wound. So it is with the heart. There's nothing to show or stitch up, yet everything is affected. The truth is that while analyzing and strategizing and preparing ourselves can occupy our minds and may even help prevent us from being hurt the same way twice, there is no substitute for giving the wound air, which in the case of the heart means saying deeply, without aversion or self-pity, "Ouch." For your meditation, sit quietly and allow a recent discomfort of heart to rise within the safety of your breathing. Breathe slowly and allow yourself to move through the discomfort by feeling it. Breathe deeply, and trust that your heart has the wisdom to filter and process this discomfort if you will only give it the chance. February 6th, Along the Way. I learn by going where I have to go. Theodore Ruttke. We drove to a lake that one of us had heard of. Around it was a path. We brought a few simple things, bread, water, bananas. We circled the lake, stopping at certain patches of light. Huge acorns were dropping from the canopy, and small ravens were preening on branches, sagging over the water. Along the way, Christine stopped, drawn to a clearing she couldn't walk by. We followed, stepping slower, breathing deeper, and off the path, the ancient trees were growing and we lost the urge to go at all. With nothing but each other and our breathing, We heard a thread of stream unravel in a song that birds imitate. We didn't talk about it, but it is the path off the path that brings us to God, for our hearts are just small birds waiting. For your meditation, center yourself and imagine your life as a path about a beautiful lake. Breathe slowly and trace your path to where you are today. Breathe deeply and imagine tomorrow's part of the path coming into view. Smell the unmarked trails. As you enter your day, stay open to the unexpected clearings that call to you. February 7th, A Legacy of Sadness. Atlas wasn't forced to hold up the world. He was convinced that if he didn't, the world would fall. Many of us are raised by well-intending parents to be the carriers of their sadness. Often the one child who is softer than the rest, who is more sensitive than the family is used to, is the one selected to deal with what no one else will deal with. It is an odd fate. I was one of those children. I was often called too sensitive, too emotional, too daydreamy. But as I grew older, as life visited us with the hardships that life inevitably brings to all families, it was I who was needed to carry the burden of my family's inability to feel. Without having my capacity to feel ever valued or acknowledged, I was the one to shoulder the family sadness with the brunt of my heart. I have come to understand that there is a huge difference between sharing someone's pain and bearing it. Too many times, those in pain use the concern of loved ones as a way to ground what they don't want to feel themselves. The way electricity runs off into the ground during a storm, they mistakenly use others to run their sadness and pain into the ground of those who care. Too often, we want others to hold our sadness or pain because we won't take the risk to ask them to hold us while we are hurting. As an adult trying to be my own person, understanding which feelings are genuinely mine and which are those I have inherited is often confusing. People like me, and maybe you identify, so let me say people like us, frequently feel responsible for the emotional condition of others. It is delicate and never-ending work, this sorting of what is truly ours and what is not. When unable to stay within ourselves, we become codependent, never feeling at peace until the emotions of everyone around us are managed and tended, not so much out of compassion, but as the only way to quiet our anxious burden as carriers of sadness. Or when rebounding the other way, we can isolate, becoming not only dispassionate to others, but also numb to ourselves. The work becomes that of making an accurate inlet of the heart, without closing off to the feelings of others or to the depth of things that are ours to feel. Though some of us were trained to carry the sadness and pain of others, the fiber of the one heart we were given is strong and light enough by itself to bring us to the wind that is whispering, "Let down, let go, the world will carry you." For your meditation, if you are a parent, think of how you share your feelings with your child. If you have a lover, think of how you share your feelings in that love. If you have a close friend, think of how you share your feelings in that friendship. Meditate on the last time you shared a sadness or a pain with this special person. Through this example, look honestly at how you share such things and see if you try to transfer or unload your sadness or pain, or if you simply give voice to what troubles you. if you can. Recall your mood as you shared. Did you want the relief of surfacing what was building inside? Or did you want your loved one to make you feel better? Did you feel closer to yourself after sharing, or more distant? If you think you have given them what's yours to carry, go to them and thank them for holding your sadness. Lift it off their hearts and take it back. Ask them to hold you instead. February 8th. Greed. The greedy one gathered all the cherries, while the simple one tasted all the cherries in one. We suffer often unknowingly from wanting to be in two places at once, from wanting to experience more than one person can. This is a form of greed, of wanting everything. Feeling like we're missing something or that we're being left out, we want it all. But being human, we can't have it all. The tension of all this can lead to an insatiable search, where our passion for life is stirred but never satisfied. When caught in this mindset, no amount of travel is enough, no amount of love is enough, no amount of success is enough. I'm not saying that we shouldn't explore our curiosity and venture into the unknown. I very much want to experience the world and love to encounter new people in my life. What I'm referring to here is that seed of lack that makes us feel insufficient. And then somehow to compensate, we start to race through life with one eye on what we have and one eye on what we don't. Greed is not restricted to money. It can work its appetite on anything. When we believe we are behind or less than, we somehow start to want more than we need, as if what we don't have will fill in our pain and make us feel whole, as if the thing we haven't tasted will be the thing to bring us alive. The truth is that one experience taken to heart will satisfy our hunger to be loved by everyone. For your meditation, bring to mind something you want to experience. Meditate on what this experience might give you. Breathe openly and meditate on what part of this gift is already at work in you. February 9th. The thing in the way. We tend to make the thing in the way the way. We are up early, eager to walk the botanical gardens of Montreal, where they have the largest bonsai collection in the world outside of Asia. We strolled toward the Chinese temple garden, a lush yet simple retreat from the streets that covers acres, a place of renewal originally constructed in the 1600s in China and moved stone by stone to Montreal in 1990. As we approached the massive gate, it was locked. I panicked, ready to demand entry after driving 400 miles from another country to see this. Robert, calmly, like an Asian sage himself, treated the situation as if it were a koan, a riddle to be entered until its very assumptions shifted. He began to walk the outer wall of the garden. It seemed insurmountable. I was frustrated. He kept walking slowly along the high wall. Since the garden stretched for acres, I wondered if we would have to walk its entire perimeter. The thought made me cranky. He kept strolling. Suddenly, when we had walked farther than was originally in our view, the walls disappeared. It turned out that the garden had no walls, save for the facade at its entrance, so we simply walked through the open grass to a path that welcomed us. How many thresholds that seem blocked or barred or locked only seem so from their initial viewing? How many opportunities for true living are barrier-free if we can only remove ourselves and our minds from their traditional points of entry? For your meditation, center yourself and consider a barrier or threshold you are facing. Breathe slowly and relax your insistence. Stop beating the door down. Breathe evenly and circle the barrier or threshold with your spirit. Breathe patiently and see if there is another way in. February 10th. What your life asks of you. How are you tending to the emerging story of your life? Carol Hegedus. Like many of us, I seem to be continually challenged not to hide who I am. Over and over, I keep finding myself in situations that require me to be all of who I am in order to make my way through. Whether breaking a pattern of imbalance with a lifelong friend, or admitting my impatience to listen to my lover, or owning my envy of a colleague, or even confronting the self-centeredness of strangers stealing parking spaces, I find I must be present, even if I say nothing. I find I must not suppress my full nature, or my life doesn't emerge. Aside from the feeling of integrity or satisfaction that comes over me when I can fully be myself, I am finding that being who I am, not hiding any of myself, is a necessary threshold that I must meet or my life will not evolve. It is a doorway I must make my way to or nothing happens. My life just stalls. Tending our stories means that our lives must open if we are to live in the mystery. Our ways of hiding, no matter how subtle, must relax open if we are to be. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate on the emerging story of your life. Breathe slowly and consider what your life asks of you so that it can emerge. Breathe fully and consider how you can better meet this inner requirement. February 11th. Simplicity. I have just three things to teach. Simplicity, patience, compassion. These are your greatest treasures. Simple in actions and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. Lao Tzu. In the 6th century BC, the legendary Chinese sage Lao Tzu gave us this threefold instruction. I will talk about simplicity here and devote separate entries later to both patience and compassion. But regarding the three as a whole, let me confess that while stumbling about my own path, I have found that I must continually learn and relearn these things, not just once, but again and again in deeper and deeper ways. They appear now like a spiral staircase, and with each stepping, I find myself deeper in the life of my soul. So what does it mean to be simple? In a world that is complicated, we are often misled to believe that being simple is being stupid, when in truth, it holds the reward for living directly, which is that things appear at last as they really are. How many times have I seen the gestures of a loved one or colleague and then struggled privately to uncover what it all really meant? How many times have I done everything possible but ask directly? How often do I refuse to be direct, not saying what I mean, not showing what I feel, not letting the life around me really touch me? Amazingly, nothing else in nature is indirect. The leopard trying to scale the mountain strains and shows its effort. The frightened squirrel in the tree hovers and trembles, showing its fright. The wave mounting toward shore saves nothing as it bows and spreads itself over and over against a shore that openly crumbles to be so loved. Only humans say one thing and mean another. Only we go one way and wish we were somewhere else. Like so many other tasks that await us, the reward is hardly what we imagine. It seems that Lao Tzu